The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGN.
Live from Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
All right, what's happening, my good people? Great to be here on a Sunday night. First time in the new studio. It's been a long time since I've been on these airwaves, and it's great to be here on 1240 AM Sports Talk, WGBB out here in Long Island. This is your host, Jason Nazario, a.k.a. J. Reels, bringing everything that's happening in the world of sports, especially here on the New York scene. Got to thank the good doctor, Rob Kowal, for being very patient with me over the course of the last, I guess, couple of years, spotting in for whomever is in this 9 o'clock slot, and obviously on the other side of the glass, Brian Graves, for producing this program as I bring you everything that's happening over the course of the next hour. Lots to get to. This first half hour before the break at 9:30, we'll get into everything that's happening in the NFL, keep you up to date with what's going on. So if you are out Christmas shopping all day or right now getting ready to wrap some gifts, well, kick back and let me entertain you for the next 57 minutes or so as we talk about what's going on in the NFL. And then the second half of the program, we'll talk everything about Yanks, Mets. We'll even go through the hardwood with the Knicks and Nets. Not much to talk with the Knicks, of course, but the Nets obviously are the, if you can believe it or not, even without Kyrie, the only show in town when it comes to the hardwood, and then we'll wrap it up with what's going on the ice with the locals. If you're a Jet and Giant fan, or Giant fan, I should say, obviously it's been a long year. But today was one of those days that if you're either one of those fans, at least you could look to the future. You can, from a 30,000-foot angle, look down, and if you're in green and white or big blue, you can say to yourself that the future does look brighter than it should. Now, granted, there's going to be a lot of changes coming up over the course of these next, you would say, 10 days or so, because as we all know, week 17 is approaching, and Black Monday is just a few hours after that, so just a week from tomorrow. But with that being said, if you're the Jets right now, and we'll start there, because with their win beating the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they've beaten some good opponents in their building this year, obviously they beat the Cowboys early on this year when their huge fan base came into their building, showed them a thing or two. When Raider Nation descended upon MetLife and they blew the doors off of the Raiders, although they won today, but that sent their season into a tailspin at 6-4 and looking at a possible postseason berth at that time. And then the Steelers, speaking of which, looking forward to making the postseason with all their injury troubles and everything that's going on with their organization. They stubbed their toe today to the likes of a Jet defense, which showed up, actually got to the quarterback to the tune of 4 sacks today. Didn't do much on offense. Obviously, they had the opening drive with Sam Darnold connecting with Robbie Anderson on an acrobatic catch in the back of the end zone. And despite the fact that the Jet offense wasn't anything to write home about, but they made just enough plays, they got enough first downs, and then, of course, at the very end, they were able to thwart the Steelers at 16-10, having the ball there with no timeouts, couldn't do anything, and the Jets right now are 6-9 and hoping to go to Buffalo with another victory in mind just so they don't have double-digit losses on their docket for 2019. Now, again, when we look at that big picture, you look at the situation with your quarterback, Sam Darnold, would you like a little bit more consistency out of him? Absolutely. We understand he does not have a great offensive line to work with, which is the big problem when you look at this Jet offense the whole year. Le'Veon Bell, who today, against his former team, 25 carries, 72 yards, also caught 4 balls from the backfield. And when you have that offensive line intact, which I'm sure the GM of the Jets, Joe Douglas, is going to be big game hunting this offseason, that's got to be his number one priority. Not only to keep his quarterback upright, but also to get the running back. And what may happen with him going forward, that remains to be seen. But chances are, he's going to be tough to trade. But you would think he'll be part of the mix here next year to where he should get back to returning close to his all-pro form. Now, you look at everything that took place in the offseason coming into this year. A lot of people thought Le'Veon Bell was going to approach something close to what he'd done during his career in Pittsburgh. But obviously, that wasn't the case because, as we all know, you need to have those hogs up front to not only pass protect, but also to run block. So now, as we're looking ahead to next year, where you have your quarterback, you have your safety in Jamal Adams, who is the quarterback of the defense. Quinnen Williams got a big sack in a big spot, who had done nothing all year, but finally showing up this this game to make an impact play, and you could only hope that he'll make plenty more in his career as a Jet. But when you look at it in a whole, everybody's going to look at the one glaring weakness, and maybe it's not more so a weakness than it is a problem, and that's the head coach. Because I'm sure there are a ton of Jet fans out there that do not trust Adam Gase as far as you can throw him. And that's going to be the one thing that, despite the fact that the future does look bright, and you can look ahead to say next year, even if the Jets end up 6-10, hopefully they could bring in a lot of personnel on the offensive side as well as the defensive side, because we all know they need a pass rush in the worst way. And we all know pass rushers do not grow on trees. But if the Jets right now are looking ahead to 2020 and hoping that they can have a big season, despite the fact they may need a bunch of pieces and a bunch of key spots, but they're certainly not far. But to me, it's all going to fall on what the head coach does. And will he be able to take this team to the next level, meaning that at this time next year, they're fighting for a playoff spot? Are they going to fight for a division? Chances are they won't, especially when Brady and Belichick are still performing their annual duties up in New England. And we all know that it's going to be their division until either one of them, or for the Jet fans' sake, both of them are going to be long gone from Foxborough. But if you're a Jet fan today, I'm sure it was good to stick it into the Steeler fans. And we'll go through the whole AFC and NFC playoff picture later on in this half hour. But right now, if you're a Jet fan, and of course, how could I forget? Feel free to give me a call if you want to talk with any questions, comments, some ranting, raving, venting, whatever it is. The number to call is 516-623-1240. Again, 516-623-1240. I should have gave you that off at the top as I follow Andy Sukoff, who is part of the double duo, the Sports Power 2 hours. He took the 8 to 9 slot, and here I am being blessed by the powers that be here at AM Sports Talk 1240 AM. So with the Jets, if you could go ahead next week, now Buffalo's already in the postseason. You don't have to worry about them playing spoiler to the Bills, but it would be nice if they could go off into 2020 with this little winning streak that they've been able to put forth. It's only 2 games, but considering that they started off 1-7, they could actually finish this year 6-2. Well, did I get that right? I got to do my math correct. So right now they won 5-7. No, they would actually, that would be the case. They would be 6-2 to close out their season. Right now math isn't my strong point, as I'm already looking ahead to the AFC and NFC playoff picture. And of course, we're going to get to the Giants in a second. But the Jet fan right now, I'm sure they're a little bit giddy. Or who knows? Maybe they're not, knowing that if they would have lost today and lost next week, and close out the season at 5-11 with their fingers crossed, hoping that Adam Gase would be jettisoned on Black Monday. Well, I don't think that's going to happen, even if that was the case. But right now, as it stands, you would think that the head coach of the Jets is going to be back here next year. Now, as far as the Giants are concerned, we understand last week was a very sentimental game, especially in our own backyard at MetLife, where Eli Manning, in his last home start, was able to prevail against the Miami Dolphins, and now with Daniel Jones back in the mix. Like I said at the top, this is where you're looking at the future here, where Daniel Jones today was just masterful. 4 touchdowns. I believe he's the 3rd rookie in NFL history to have 3 games of at least 3 touchdown passes in his rookie season. And Jones, who's back from the injury, I did not watch the game because I was focused on Steelers Jets, and obviously they were playing at the same 1 o'clock time frame. And again, the Redskins, nothing to write home about with Daniel Jones beating and the Giants beating the Redskins, as 2 of their victories this year have come against the team that plays in D.C. But with the Giants right now and the performance that Saquon Barkley put forth today, that was the Saquon that you were hoping to get here in 2019. And the Giants, similar to the Jets, they have certain pieces in place. But, of course, they need to shore up in other places to kind of get themselves ready for a 2020 season where, as we all know, year in and year out in the NFL, anything goes. Now, I understand the Giant fan may be a little bit upset with the win over the Redskins today because when you look at their positioning for the 2020 draft, it certainly hurts when, for the most part, you are going to be number two selected overall because, as of today, the Cincinnati Bengals have clinched the number one pick for next year, and chances are they're going to pick a one Joe Burrow, the Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU. But now the Giants, because of their wins here in the last couple weeks, and even though the Dolphins won today, but you got to remember, I don't know how the tiebreaker, if there is tiebreakers that work there, but if the Giants had their sights set on a one Chase Young, the pass-rushing phenom out of Ohio State, which you'll get to see next Saturday for the whole country in the college football playoff, which we'll get to later on. But right now, it looks as if the Giants, who I'm sure they can't say anything now, it's way too early, they got to wait for the season to end, but I'm sure the whispers in that building are thinking that if we could get that guy to be our LT of this generation, they must have been salivating over the last couple of weeks. But now it looks like they have a couple other teams that are ahead of them that it looks like they'll probably go ahead and draft a guy that, as we all know, could wreck a game and could certainly change the outlook of any game from the defensive side of the ball. Now the Giants, they could actually put a crimp in the NFC East playoff picture next week as they host the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Eagles did some damage today beating the Dallas Cowboys, and we'll take the overview of both the AFC and NFC in a moment. But as far as the Giants are concerned, the one thing that you got to look at here as we close out the season next week, unlike the Jets situation with Adam Gase and the likelihood of him coming back to be head coach of 2020, I don't care if the Giants win 40-0 next week and the Eagles are sent home packing and Dallas wins at home against the Redskins in their final game to win the division and then they go on to the postseason. There is no way, shape, or form that Ray Shurmur comes back as the head coach. Or excuse me, Pat Shurmur. I got Ray Shurmur in my head. Excuse me. Pat Shurmur, the current coach of the Giants, does not see the light of day come Monday, December the 30th. Now, if you're the utmost Giant fan, the most diehard, dye-in-the-wool, whether you want him back or not, it would only be smart because when you look at the last few years, or even let's just take back that last playoff game a few years ago when the Giants went to Green Bay, they were 11-5, they lost that wild card game to the Packers, which was the first year of Ben McAdoo, and we all know ever since then, it's just been a downward spiral to the abyss of the NFL. I mean, they belong right there at the bottom with the Cleveland Browns, despite the fact that they've played a lot better these last couple of years prior to that, losing, winning one game in 2 years. Or if you're the Bengals or the Arizona Cardinals, the Giants belong in that same sentence. And right now, when you look at it from a coaching perspective moving forward, there's no way that this guy could come back. Now, with the GM, Dave Gettleman, at the helm, you would think with a one Ron Rivera who got fired from Carolina a few weeks ago, you would think he'd be the odds-on favorite to come here to not only instill a defensive strategy or defensive standpoint, considering the last two coaches they brought in here were more offensive-minded, so to kind of get back to that rugged Giant football. Now, we all know you need to have the personnel, so it doesn't matter who you have there as coach. You certainly got to have the players to back that up, but you would think that Ron Rivera could be the guy to come in here to follow up the last couple of just dreadful seasons that a one Pat Shurmur has produced as coach of the Giants. So whether you're a Jet fan, feeling high and mighty, thinking that maybe we could beat Buffalo, go into this offseason at 7-9, or hoping that you go 6-10 to see where you fall in the draft and maybe get a decent draft pick, probably somewhere in the top 10, probably in the back half of the top 10. And if you're the Giants, you're thinking the same thing. And also, can you get me another coach to put under my Christmas tree, although it'll be past Christmas, but you get my point. So that's what we got as far as the locals are concerned. And if anybody wants to give me a holler, please feel free. 516-623-1240 is the telephone number, two-way sports talk radio here from now until 10 p.m. All right, now to turn my attention to the league overall. Now, my service here is not great. I don't know about producer Brian Graves as far as my cell phone service is concerned because I'm trying to pull up some standings and scores. All right, now it finally came up, so My apologies. So let's get you up to date with what's going on. If you, like I said, were out Christmas shopping or just running around the city or the five boroughs or out here on the island, of course, and you want to get caught up, well, you've come to the right place. So let's bring you up to speed with what's happening here in the AFC. As far as the games are concerned, and the NFC as well. We'll start with the AFC, of course. You had the three games yesterday. The big one was Bills and Pats. Patriots came from behind to beat the Bills 24-17. So the Patriots not only win the AFC East for the 11th straight time, but although with their win, they cannot get the one seed in the AFC because the Ravens win in Cleveland today 31-15. The Ravens right now are the hottest team in the NFL. They've won 11 straight games. And because they've wrapped up the one seed, which they will host through the Super Bowl if they make it that far, you would think they're going to rest a bunch of their players, or at least they'll probably play one quarter or a half at the most, because there is no way, shape, or form that Coach John Harbaugh is going to go in there guns a-blazing, as much as he'd probably want to oust Pittsburgh and any type of playoff possibilities that they may have. But he has to be smart. He has to realize that it's all about the big picture. And you would think that even with the Ravens right now, who are in cruise control, if somehow, some way they were to win next week, you can't see them running the table pretty much from week five all the way to the Super Bowl, despite the fact that they are right now, hands down, the best team in the NFL. But we all know the best team in the NFL isn't crowned in December, and it certainly isn't crowned in January. It's that first Sunday in February, where this year will be down in Miami for Super Bowl 54. And the Ravens right now, with the 13-2 record, Pats 12-3, right now you have the Chiefs playing in Chicago. They're currently up 10-0 Sunday Night Football. If the Chiefs win there, they will have an opportunity to get themselves a two seed, barring the Patriots losing next week at home to Miami, which will not happen. And of course, Kansas City would have to win next week as they host the Chargers, which probably will happen. And then you got the Houston Texans, who won yesterday and beating the Tampa Bay Bucks. But you also got to throw them in the mix, because right now they are currently at 10-5. And with the situation trickling down, 2-seed, 3-seed, and 4-seed, that could all switch over the course of the next 8 days. Say if the Chiefs lose tonight, the Chiefs will be 10-5, which would mean that the Houston Texans will have the third seed in the AFC because of a tiebreaker, them beating Kansas City early in this year. But if it goes as expected, the Chiefs win, they'll have the three seed, where Houston will have the four. Buffalo's locked in at 5. And your sixth seed as of right now, the Tennessee Titans, even though they lost to the New Orleans Saints today at home 38-28, but with the Steelers losing to the Jets, and I'll get to the Steelers a little bit later. I'm a huge Steeler fan. I got to throw in my 2 cents. I know it's a New York Sports Talk radio program, but we all know that there's a ton of Steeler fans here in the tri-state area. But I'll just spend a couple minutes. I won't go ham on them. But with the Steeler loss, and even with the Titan loss, the Steelers, who had the 6 seed going into today, right now, as constituted, the Tennessee Titans would have the 6 seed in the AFC because of the conference tiebreaker record. Now, that could all change a week from now, because if the Steelers win in Baltimore and if Tennessee loses at Houston, the Steelers will get the 6 seed and Tennessee will be home for the holidays because of the strength of schedule. So the Steelers will need help to get into the postseason next week based on what I just described, and all Tennessee has to do is win and they're in. So if Tennessee loses and Pittsburgh loses, obviously Tennessee will back into the postseason. So for the Steeler fans out there, I tell you, it's been a topsy-turvy year. We don't have to go through all the particulars. We all know we've gotten here at 8-7. And three things I'm going to state, and I've said this before and I've said it time and time again. The defense is going to carry us, but so far, but so much, I should say, because we're going to live and die by that defense, because our offense, despite the fact we have some decent players, the James Washingtons of the world, and even Deontay Johnson, who's shown some promise. But other than that, we have nothing. James Conner, who cannot stay healthy to save his life. They have too many running backs by committee. And when you do not have a running game, it's hard to have guys like Delvin Hodges and even Mason Rudolph to a certain extent, who we probably won't see for the rest of the year because it looks like he hurt his shoulder today. There's no way that the Steeler offense is going to go anywhere, even if they make it to the postseason, because this offense is just putrid. There's no other way to say it. So one is the defense that can only carry us for so much. Two, there's just no running threat, and they need to have a running threat when you have a guy that is an undrafted rookie from Samford who has played okay, but these last 2 weeks between the four interceptions against Buffalo and the two interceptions in the first half, I mean, what could you say? But with that said, they can still make it to the postseason next week because they are still alive. Baltimore will probably rest everybody. And we'll see what happens in Houston if Tennessee does flop and Houston wins. And like I said, if Kansas City loses this game tonight, and even if they don't, they're still playing for seeding next week. So Houston still has some fight left. They don't have to call off the dogs to the 2019 season and say, okay, well, we'll see whomever in round one. They can still get a three seed. So they got something to play for. I don't think they're going to lay down and let Tennessee roll over them. And remember, they just played them last week in Tennessee where Houston won. So obviously a lot to digest here over the course of the next 8 days, a lot to chew on, or 7 days really, because of course the season is going to end next Sunday, and then we have the postseason the week after. Now, as far as the NFC is concerned, pretty much all the seedings are yet to be determined, but the NFC is all set because you don't have to worry about anybody on the outside looking in. Where the AFC, I know the Raiders are still alive with their win against the Chargers. We get that. But they certainly need a lot of help. They would need Pittsburgh to lose. They need Tennessee to lose. And they got to have that to happen in order for, and then Oakland has to win. And they go to Denver. And Denver is actually hasn't played too bad in recent weeks. So with the NFC, it's a lot more clear cut, but now it's just a matter of seeding. Now, the big game in the NFC today, actually there were two of them. One was the big one in Philadelphia where the Eagles, who weren't that impressive, but Dallas, and I watched most of this game before I got here. Dak didn't have a good game, but then again, his receivers didn't help him out. Michael Gallup made one acrobatic catch on the sideline, but then you had Amari Cooper dropping balls. Witten had a drop. The Dallas offense was not in sync. And the Cowboys, who are still alive, because if they win next week and the Eagles lose, they'll win the division. But right now, it's the Eagles flying high with a 17-9 win, and they currently have the fourth slot in the NFC. The other big game of note was the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals go into Seattle after last night the 49ers disposed of the Rams and their playoff hopes, winning on a last-second field goal. Back-to-back weeks they actually won on last-second field goals, the Niners, that is. And with the Seahawks losing at home, 27-13 to the Arizona Cardinals, the San Francisco 49ers, and it seems like every week it's flip-flopped. 2 weeks ago, you had the Niners win a game in New Orleans. That was 2 weeks ago, the game-winning field goal. Forgive me on that. But 2 weeks ago, you had them win at New Orleans, where Seattle loses. Then last week, you had Seattle winning, and then the Falcons upsetting the Niners. And now this week you had the Cardinals upsetting the Seahawks to where the Niners now are in the top spot in the NFC with the number one seed. And who knows? I'm sure a lot will change between now and then because that's just how the NFL is. Is it topsy-turvy, unpredictable as it could possibly be from week in to week out? And when we look at the NFC, so San Francisco is at 12-3, followed by New Orleans, who, as I said earlier, beat Tennessee. Green Bay, who has a big game tomorrow night in Minnesota against the Vikings, not for the division because currently the Packers are 4-0 in the NFC North where the Vikings are 2-2. So the Vikings will need to get help in order to win a division and host a home game. But right now they are in the sixth slot in the NFC. And, of course, the Seahawks, who with their loss at 11-4, if the Vikings were to win tomorrow night, there would still be a sixth seed because, remember, Seattle beat them on a Monday night a few weeks ago. So they have the tiebreaker over the Vikings. But it's pretty much clear cut. San Francisco with a win next week, they'll control their destiny at home in the postseason as far as they can go. Followed by New Orleans, then Green Bay. If they win, they will still stay at number three, but they'll win a division if they win tomorrow night. Philly is entrenched in that four. But they have to win the game next week in order to win the division, as we talked about earlier, having to play the Giants and beat them. The Seahawks right now they could shoot up the charts. They could flip-flop, as we all know, because Seattle and San Francisco play next Sunday, and you would think the NBC schedule will flex that to a night game. It's either that or Houston-Tennessee, but we all know Houston-Tennessee is not a sexy matchup. They're going to want Seattle and San Francisco in that Sunday night finale. And then Minnesota, they finish up at home against Chicago, and then the Packers are in Detroit to close out the year. And then Dallas, as we said earlier, right now 7-8, but with a win against Washington next week at home and an Eagle loss to the Giants, the Dallas Cowboys will host a playoff game in the wild card weekend next Saturday or Sunday. Or the following, I should say, because obviously next weekend is week 17, the final regular season weekend of the NFL. So that's what you got, people. There's your latest and greatest up to the date with the NFL. And tomorrow night, like I said, Vikings Packers will be a big game. We'll keep an eye on Chiefs and Bears before we say goodbye. Now, the game obviously is not going to finish by the time we sign off, but we'll certainly keep an eye on that right now. As again, I think it was 10-0. The Bears have been a dead team walking, and despite the fact that they were alive as of last week in that game against the Packers that they lost in Lambeau. But NFL right now is front and center. It is the sport that everybody's going to be focused on, because the other winter sports right now kind of get lost in the shuffle. And this has been a couple of maybe 90 seconds before we take our first break. The college football playoff is next weekend, where you have LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson. The double dip next Saturday at 4 and 8 o'clock. Real quick, I can see Clemson and LSU meeting up for the national champion, but the one thing I do not understand is why are they waiting 16 days between the championship doubleheader and the national championship is beyond me. I understand that Monday night game, they have a January 6th, which is the first Monday after the wild card weekend. Why do they have a bowl game set up there is beyond me. It's Louisville and some other school, but anyway, should be a very interesting Final Four next week. I got LSU, Clemson. I think LSU is going to win the whole thing, if you ask me. So I know in a couple minutes we'll take a break here with our man, Mr. Brian Graves, on the other side of the glass here on Sports Talk, 1240 AM. Please, people, give me a holler. I'm here for another half hour, 516-623-1240, whatever's on your mind. You want to talk NFL? You want to bitch and moan about the Mets and Yankees, which I'm going to get to at the top of the next half hour? I'll start off with a little baseball to kind of get your hearts a little warm on this not-so-cold night, and it's not actually going to be cold over the course of the next couple of days, which is good, because I know we had a little bit of an Arctic blast there last week, but hey, well, the last couple of days. But that's all right. We're going to take you up to the top of the hour to bring you everything that's happening here, not only in New York sports, but everything that's happening throughout the sports landscape. Again, the call letters WGBB, Sports Talk, 1240 AM. Jason Nazario, a.k.a. J-Reels, here with you, 516-623-1240. Come on back.
Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, Jason Azario back, a.k.a. J. Reels here, 9:32, Sunday, December 22nd, year of our Lord 2019. Here to bring you up to the top of the hour, talking sports, New York sports. So, before we get to the winter sports, basketball, hockey, I want to talk a little baseball. And if you're a Met fan, it's interesting. The Met fan right now is looking at the bottom of their Christmas tree, and they see that, yeah, they got some small gifts. They even look over at the stocking there, and they say, oh, what's this? Oh, Jake Mariznick? All right. And then they look at their gifts. Not too big. Doesn't look too shiny, but they unwrap them, and you see a one Rick Porcello. You also unwrap the other, and you see a Michael Wacha. And you kind of look at it and say, am I happy? I'm not too happy. I got a couple of gifts. They're small. They're not too shiny. But you'll take it because you want to be grateful. Now, I rail the Mets all the time, if you listen to me, and I'll talk more about that later on at the end of the podcast, as far as where you can listen to me, for those who wish to. But if you're a Mets fan right now, the only thing you could say is, if you're Brody Van Wagenen, we understand they're going to do whatever it takes to be creative. They're not going to break the bank. They're always going to go to the bottom of the clearance bins at Kmart. They're going to see what scraps they could find. And we understand that creativity burned them last year in a one Edwin Diaz and Robinson Cano with that trade. So let's see if Jared Kelenic turns out to be a 10-time All-Star. But if you're a Met fan right now, the one thing that you can hang your hat on is what's going on with Yoenis Cespedes. And the reason why I say that is because with the remarks that he mentioned the other day to Eduardo Perez about him playing 140 games, him hitting 40 home runs, he's predicting 52, which of course is his number. And with the contract being restructured to, at one point it was supposed to be half of the $29 million he was supposed to make in 2020, to now it's $6 million base. And with all the incentives that he can make up to $20 million, by having that bat in the lineup and that presence, because we know when he's healthy, he has performed at an MVP level. That's how excited I am. I can't even talk right now. But when you throw Cespedes in that lineup to where you have Alonso, a healthy Cano, and his name's going to be 37, Conforto, Jeff McNeil, you have a dangerous lineup. And that's not including Ahmed Rosario, who came into his own last year, Wilson Ramos, who we all know is a dependable stick. But with Cespedes being in the lineup, and I'm sure he's going to do whatever it takes to make it to the opening day lineup, because I believe the first incentive is that if he is not on the IL or not in the opening day lineup, he will be scheduled to earn $11 million for next year, minimum. So to think, right now it's at six, he could almost double that if he's penciled in the opening day lineup. When is that? March 26th of next year, and I believe it's in Washington. So that's the one thing that I'm looking forward to. And I don't want to hear anything about these trades. People talk about, oh, you could trade Cespedes. You're not going to get anything back. And even with that contract restructured, there's no way you're going to get back a plethora of young players or even a contract that's comparable to bring back. No, just stick with Cespedes for one more year. Even if he has that monster year, I don't care if he wins the regular season MVP and, dare I say, is a World Series MVP. You do not bring him back the following year. Do not. Let him go elsewhere. We'll thank him. We'll build a statue, et cetera, et cetera. But, we've been there, done that with that contract, and let him get his money elsewhere. And it's not a knock on Cespedes. And I love him for the 100 games that he's played as a Met, which is, seems like it's only in 2015. But there's no way you'd sign him to a long-term deal after this year, despite the fact that he goes out and hits 52 home runs and hits 300 and drives in 130. So that's the one thing I'm banking on. Because other than that, I don't expect Brody or anybody else in this organization to go out and try to bring in another reliever. The starting pitching is already set. The center fielder, Jake Marisnyk, I'm sorry, he's a better version, more so offensively than Juan Lagares, and maybe defensively. I've seen him play defense if you watch him over the years, and he started off with the Marlins before moving to Houston, and oh, he's good, he's a good glove. But is he the guy that's going to play every day? Now, we understand this whole creativity nonsense. Who knows if Dom Smith's going to be in the deal? Brandon Nimmo, those are the guys that are being bandied about right now. As far as who's going to come back remains to be seen. But to me, right now, as constituted, this is going to be the Met team moving forward. And if anything else comes out of it, I'd be shocked. And I can't stand that that's the case. I wish that wasn't. And I know that the Mets aren't going to spend the big bucks. I know they're not. They weren't. They did not have their sights set on Anthony Rendon or Gerrit Cole or any of these guys. None. Would have been nice to have those guys, of course. But the Mets, they're not thinking that way. Even with a looming future owner in Steve Cohen with all the $9.2 billion or whatever it is that he has that are hopefully on the horizon. But as of this moment, the Mets are going to continue to have that small market mentality or middle market mentality because it's not as if their payroll is $80 million. But we all know the Mets aren't going to make the big splash. The Mets aren't going to go ahead and shock the baseball world with a trade or move that's certainly going to put themselves at the top of the National League food chain. And to think, last year they had a Cy Young Award winner, a Rookie of the Year, and almost a batting title champion and a one Jeff McNeil. And the Mets still didn't come anywhere close to sniffing the postseason. Were they in the race in September? Technically, yeah. But they were pretty much done after Labor Day. So that's the deal for the year of the Mets. And now to go from the small toys and the stocking stuffers to the big gift under the tree if you're in the Bronx and if you're a Yankee fan. And quite the opposite. If the Yankees do not do anything the rest of this postseason, or this offseason, excuse me, you're going to be probably 100% content knowing that you got the big prize under your tree in a number 45, Gerrit Cole. And even with their lineup as stacked as it is, and their bullpen still stacked, and we get that maybe they want to have the marriage again with Dylan Patances, we'll see. I guess it has to, all depends on the dollars. But this Yankee team, and I said this last week and I'll say it again, this team is not only the prohibitive favorite to win the American League, to me, they're the prohibitive favorite to win the whole thing. Because last year, as unhealthy as that team was, put together with Scotch tape bubblegum for most of the season, to still win 103 games, and right, the season ended bitter on the swing of Jose Altuve in a Game 6 that you didn't even get to a Game 7. But a lot of that had to do with your starting pitching, and timely hitting, of course, because that's what it's all about in the postseason. But now that going into this year, you don't expect to have a zillion guys on the IL. You have your stud pitcher who is not going to be pulled in the sixth inning because he's thrown 86 pitches. We have the bullpen that we all know is probably arguably the best in baseball. And they still have a surplus of players that they can actually deal to bring in guys like a Josh Hader, a reliever from Milwaukee, or a Kyle Schwarber, a left-handed bat from Chicago. That if they bring one of those two guys in, or even both, and I know that this talks about Francisco Lindor, if the Yankees are flirting with that, they should just, I mean, why even bother? The Yankees need Lindor like Jeff Bezos needs another $100 million, or $100 billion. They do not need Francisco Lindor. Because we all know, if Lindor is going in that trade, I could bet my life that the GM, Mike Chernoff of the Indians, is going to ask for Gleyber Torres. And we know that's going to be an absolute zero. But if the Yankees were to get one of those two guys, whether it's Hader or Schwarber, and to me, I think they need Schwarber more than Hader for this reason. The Yankees are so right-hand dominant that to get a left-handed stick of that class would be, the lineup is sick as it is, but now you're just talking murderer's row. Because you're going to put him in between Judge, Stanton, Sanchez, Torres. Jeez, well, when does it stop? But I will say this, and I said this after the season ended. I think if the Yankees, because they're so right-hand dominant, I would be, and I understand this may not be popular belief for the Yankee fans, but you want to trade, you want to get Schwarber, and I would just trade this guy straight up for him. Trade Gary Sanchez for Kyle Schwarber. You're not going to really have to worry about health with Schwarber because he's going to be a DH. The guy's going to hit 50 home runs in his sleep with that short porch. And Sanchez, you don't have to worry about the defense. You can put me a catcher at the Yankee backstop. And you're not going to miss a beat because you have a zillion other guys in that lineup. So if the Yankee fan right now is falling out of their chair saying, oh, my God, Jason, Jay Reels, what are you, nuts? You're going to trade Sanchez for Schwarber? You're crazy. We need Sanchez in that lineup. I just said all the right-handed sticks you have in that lineup. And that's not including a Luke Voit who could probably start next year at first base. And I didn't mention DJ LeMahieu, another right-handed stick. So you're talking LeMahieu, Torres, Stanton, and Judge. Four guys. Take Sanchez out. Trade him for Schwarber. Or you want to trade him for Hader straight up. They just lost the Yasmani Grandal Brewers. I'm sure they would love to have Sanchez be a part of their team for next year. Why not? So if you're a Yankee fan right now, the lights are glowing. The gifts under the tree, I mean, it's as sparkling, as bright as possible. You're feeling good. You finally got the gift that you've been waiting for the longest time. And now you're just ready to open it up that late March weekend to start the season. And you just hope that you'd steamroll into October and hopefully to a World Series. And if you're the Mets, yeah, you're happy you got a gift. You're playing with it a little bit. You kind of drop the one toy. You look at the other and, all right, let me play with this before. Okay. And then you kind of look at it and you say, wow, you know, I wish I could have gotten this, or I wish I could have gotten that. I tell you, the contrast of the Met and Yankee organizations and the fan bases, I tell you, it couldn't be more of a disparity than you could ever imagine. 516-623-1240. I'm here for another 16 minutes, people. So get on the horn. I'd love to hear what you got to say about anything that's happening in the world of sports or New York sports, whatever that may be. As I take a sip of water, please forgive me. Well, let's turn our attention here locally to the hockey. It's three-tiered. Islanders right now the best team out of the three. I know the Rangers fans are going to argue that. Long-term, the Rangers, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, that's for sure. Now, they started off slow. They played a lot better. I think they were killing Anaheim 5-1 last time I checked tonight. So with all the draft picks and all the youth, and as that team continues to build under Coach David Quinn, you would think that maybe even as early as next year, but you figure 2 years from now, they could certainly be that team in the East that could represent in a Stanley Cup final. Now, the goaltending situation, I don't know about the kid Georgiev that well. I have not watched a lot of Ranger hockey this year, I will admit. But you would think that they're going to have enough in the tank as far as personnel on the ice defensively to not need a world-class goaltender to carry you to the Cup Final. Now, we all know the goal is important. But the Rangers are certainly playing well. Islanders, what could you say about what they've done to follow up everything last year? Now, they have a bunch of games in hand with the Capitals. But right now, the Islanders, as constituted, you could only hope that they could continue to, they need to score. That's the big thing, especially in the postseason, as we saw last year. When you look at the Islanders, as far as making any deep playoff runs, we know the system, we know what Barry Trotz is all about, we understand that, but really at the end of the day, is being able to get the guys to get big goals in big situations, and they do not have that deadly sniper. They have a bunch of players that could score. We know the Matthew Barzals of the world, the Brock Nelsons, of course, Captain Andrews, we get all that, but at the same time, there's not that one bona fide guy. We do not have, as an Islander fan, there's no Mike Bossy on this team. There's no Pat LaFontaine on this team. There's no Pierre Turgeon on this team. And before you could start saying, well, hey, that was hockey of old. There's no 50-goal scorers. We get that. And that's not to say Barzal or Brock Nelson, they can't be that. But again, these guys aren't snipers in the league, unlike some of the other players that are out there that would just score goals with their eyes closed. But the Islanders have certainly piggybacked on what they did last year. I thought they may take a step back, but they performed very well here. And you can only hope they can continue to get home ice. And the playoffs are still a ways to go, but they've certainly done well. But the Capitals have been flying high all year. And right now, by far, they're the best team point-wise, of course, but they look like they're the best team on ice this year. And then you have the Devils, who came into this year trying to do whatever it takes to build around their former MVP, Taylor Hall, to bring in guys like P.K. Subban, Wayne Simmonds, some veteran presence, to be able to mesh and blend with the MVP, knowing that he was going into a walk year, and the season couldn't have been as bad as it has as we sit here on December 22nd. The coach gets fired. They have to end up trading Taylor Hall to Arizona to get five players in return, including a number one pick and a conditional number three for next year, and they had to do it. They knew that this was going to be a long season, that if they didn't make the trade and not get anything back for him, it would have been an out-and-out disaster. So the Devils did exactly what they had to do, and something that the Islanders should have done a couple years ago, but we all know that's a story that needs its own hour of sports talk. And even though it's old news by now with Tavares going north of the border, we all know the whole deal, but still. The Devils did the right thing by trading him to get something back so they could build on for the future. And who knows? You would think Simmonds is going to be gone. Subban, I know, makes a lot of money. Who knows if they're going to keep him here. But if you're the Devils right now, you would just crater the whole thing and just start over if you can. Because as of right now, I mean, this is just a lost season. And that's what you pretty much got with the hockey here locally. I don't know. Could the Rangers make it push to the postseason? I mean, right now, what are they at? They're at 35 points. They still are back in the wild card. It's, to me, once you get past the All-Star break, then you can start talking about wild card. Right now, it's still too early. So if you're the Rangers right now, you're hoping to get a nice, good run here as you enter the new year. There'll probably be some growing pains along the way where they'll probably be on the outside looking in. So the Islanders will probably be the only team for the second year in a row to come out here out of the three teams locally. But again, still a ton of hockey to be played, and it remains to be seen how it will all shake down. Now, as I turn my attention to the NBA, and I know a lot of it's more centered around the Knicks because of the 35 Net fans that are out there, and give it up for Kenny Atkinson and company, and we'll get to them in a few minutes. But the Knicks right now, with everything that's gone on, I know Porzingis had made some comments recently about David Fizdale, which I guess was a knock to the organization, and we all know that that divorce was certainly bitter, to say the least, between Porzingis and the Knicks hierarchy. Now, we all know that the Knicks failed drastically in their attempt to bring in both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant as they took their talents to the other side of the Brooklyn Bridge. But the Knicks right now are hoping that between now and the All-Star break or right around there with the trade deadline, they could unload some of these guys' expiring contracts to free up more space. Now, right now, as far as the free agency for next year, there isn't the Kevin Durant or the Kyrie Irving or the Kawhi Leonard that's out. Now, 2 years from now, you have Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, but if you're the Knicks, the hierarchy and the fan base, you cannot even think about free agency or even think about getting the big guy, whomever that may be, for that offseason to come here, because if you've seen time and time again, going back to 2010, at the beginning of this decade, where LeBron didn't come here and they didn't come back again, and then Durant didn't come here and Kyrie, what makes you think that the narrative is going to change, whether it's going to be this year or the following year, where the Greek Freak's going to come play his games at Madison Square Garden? The Knicks, we understand, it's a mess. I like Scott Perry. I think he should be the GM. Steve Mills, on the other hand, it's time for him to go. Who are you going to put in that position? Who knows? But it is a sad state of affairs where the Knicks, for pretty much this whole century, has had 1 year that they could hang their hat on, and that was a 54-28 year in 2013 where Carmelo Anthony was number three in the MVP voting and the Knicks were ousted in the second round by the Pacers. That is your highlight of the past 20 years. And you do not see any light at the end of the tunnel. And I understand that it's tough for the Knicks fan, and they are some diehard fans out there, but you're going to have to probably wait a little while longer. And you only hope that the Scott Perry, Steve Mills, if it is going to be Steve Mills, or if Mike Miller is still going to be the coach moving forward, that this Knick team could somehow, some way put together a roster more through the draft than free agency. Because even with the likes of Elfrid Payton and Marcus Morris and Julius Randle and these guys, they'll all play power forward. I understand Payton is a guard, but when you've got a surplus of forwards on your team and you do not have enough balance, and despite the fact that Fizdale, did he deserve to get fired? Well, some of his substitutions were weird, and you know what? It just wasn't going to work out. But again, it's not all on the coach. It's all on what the front office is putting forth as far as personnel on the floor is concerned. And like I said, if you're the Knicks, there's just no end in sight. And obviously with the way college basketball is today, you have number ones being through the revolving door week in and week out. So if you're Kentucky, if you're Kansas, if you're Michigan State, if you're Duke, if you're Louisville, it is as wide open as college basketball has ever been. But then again, college basketball is an afterthought now because you just wait to March Madness and see who's going to be the player or players that are going to be the top part of the draft, the cream of the crop, so to speak. And then you can only hope and pray that you can get one of those guys that could change the fortunes of your franchise. But as far as the Nets, Kenny Atkinson, their record is now 16-13. We only had the tough start. And a lot of this is without Kyrie Irving, which is even more so amazing because everything was banked on both of those guys coming here. We know Durant wasn't going to play, but just the aura of Durant, the championship pedigree, I'm sure a lot of the players could feed off of him and would try to somehow, some way, pick his brain to use as a pseudo coach to get them through the long rigors of a NBA season. But you got to give the coach credit for what he's done so far with this team without their best player. And it's even going to be more interesting because just like you saw in Boston, and not to start this controversy up, but just like you saw in Boston where Kyrie Irving was out that whole postseason and the Celtics went to a Game 7 2 years ago, the Eastern Conference Final, you wonder if there's going to be any of that type of environment, I can't find the right word, but you wonder if there's going to be that type of aura. I'll use that word again. You wonder if that's going to be part of the struggle here if Kyrie or when he gets back and what that could mean for this team. Will he be a jolt in the arm where they just springboard to as far high they can go in the Eastern Conference standings? Or is it going to be the Kyrie show and the other four guys that are on the floor at any given time? And that, yeah, they'll win their big games, and yeah, they'll have their moments, but they're kind of at the bottom of the Eastern Conference bracket. So that's a dynamic that we're certainly going to look at once he's healthy, once he has a few games under his belt, to kind of get the feel of what the team's going to be like once Irving is back in the building and in uniform and on the court. So it's fascinating from that regard where the Nets, who right now are the bigger draw, if you could believe that. I understand the building usually sells out at the Garden, but when you have arguably the biggest star in the NBA right now, the reigning MVP at Madison Square Garden last night, but Kobe Bryant is in Brooklyn watching the Hawks play the Nets, and granted, I'm sure it was Vince Carter's last game. I don't have the Nets schedule in front of me, but I'm sure it's Vince Carter, or if not his last game, it's next to his last game in that building. But when Kobe Bryant is at front and center, mid-court or wherever he was sitting on the sidelines, watching the Hawks and Vince Carter and not across the bridge watching Giannis Antetokounmpo destroy the Knicks, I mean, what does that tell you about the state of New York teams as far as basketball is concerned? Now, of course, people would say, oh, please, Jay Reels, you're going to say Kobe Bryant is going to determine by him by going there that it's a better draw? Well, no, but it does say something. And don't you think? So that's what you got locally in basketball. So here we are, your Jet Giant season, just to kind of surmise before we say goodbye. Your Jet Giant season, although today you could hold your head up high and you see what happens in Week 17 and what happens on Black Monday, and then you look ahead to the draft. Yankees and Mets, you got the shiny toy in the Bronx, and you have the small little trinkets, but not too shiny, in Queens. You have the Islanders are right now are skating pretty, where the Rangers are a little bit behind, but certainly doing well. Devils, you can pretty much write them off. And then the Knicks and Nets, as I just summarized, are going in two different directions very fast. So that's what you have there. So before I say goodbye real quick, for those who want to listen to me, I don't know when the next time I'll be here. Hopefully I'll be here sooner than later. I think it's been a couple of years since I've been here. I have a crazy schedule on the weekends, and part of it has to do with a podcast that I host, and it's called the J Reels Podcast. So for those who are interested, it's J-A-Y-R-E-E-L-Z, so that's two E's, J-A-Y-R-E-E-L-Z Podcast. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Luminary, Player FM, CastBox, wherever you get your podcast. I usually host a podcast every Monday morning, but it's not just New York, it's all sports. So you'll get my dynamics from all the different angles that you have, and you probably be around the lunchtime tomorrow, usually anywhere between 12 to 2, sometimes even by 5 p.m. by your commute home, you get a chance to hear what it is that I have to say about the world of sports. You can also check me out on the website, www.jreels.com, for those that are interested, and of course, any of those podcast platforms that you subscribe to. If you were to subscribe, I'd greatly appreciate it. I have two podcasts this week. One to recap the week that was here, not only in the world of sports, but also Wednesday, I have a former NFL All-Pro linebacker for Christmas Day. That's a big surprise for the Steeler fans out there, so you want to peep that, LaVon Kirkland. For those who remember the teams in the 90s, that's very interesting things to say about his playing days in the NFL. So that'll be on Christmas Day for you to open up with the rest of your gifts there on the 25th. But, yes, at 9:58 and 29 seconds, I will start to say goodbye for now. This is Jason Nazario here on WGBB Sports Talk, 1240 AM. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I want to wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Kwanzaa, Boxing Day, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to everybody. Until next time, whenever that may be, hope all is well. Have a good night and happy holidays.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.